Welcome to the Africa Speaking Podcast. The podcast discusses critical issues about the African continent. It is brought to you by Teresa Communications in Nairobi.
Welcome back to the final episode of our two-part series. I'm your host, Maslin Nyambala. We are continuing our vital exploration of financing options for Kenyan entrepreneurs in climate change. This in partnership with the Kenya Climate Innovation Center, alongside the expertise of Ernest Chitechi. Today, we also delve into the crucial roles of cultural knowledge, government policies, learning institutions, and other groundbreaking innovation in mitigating climate change. You've mentioned all this, what you've done, 57,000 jobs. Are there some very, very unique innovations over the last, you can say 13 years or so, that you can say, maybe you mention one or two, some unique innovations that have come from some of the people that you have supported?
Yes, we have quite a number of innovations that came out of KCIC. A good case I would maybe give would be the Coco Network.
Coco Network.
I'm sure you've seen them. These guys who are supplying cooking fuel with in blue colored.
Yeah,
so they're all over now currently. They started out within KCIC. So that's one of them.
They have this oil.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. You must have seen them. So that's one innovation within the clean cooking. Within the energy sector, we have Power Hive and Power Gen. These are doing mainly off-grid solar solutions. They're also within KCIC. We also have Hydroponic Africa. And then they're the ones who are promoting hydroponic farming, where you plant without using soil. They're also a good case from KCIC. We have Sanergy. That are also doing renewable energy to just also develop pellets for use. Kings Biofuel, they're in briquette production. We have Exotic EPZ, they're in agriculture, doing macadamia value chains, among others. So those are just some of the big examples that I wanted to mention.
Then you mentioned that the amount of carbon, in terms of carbon trading, carbon absorption, what can you say?
Looking at the solutions that are being developed within KCIC, you'll find the ones that are in mitigation. And mitigation here means the ones that are within the energy space. They're trying to reduce our carbon footprint. They'll provide you with the clean technology that will help us then reduce our carbon footprint. Similarly, you'll see a lot of them within the commercial forestry and also waste management. So, but because some of them are quite small, so you may find that they may not really on their own qualify for carbon trading. So as an organization, then what we've done, we've tried to develop an aggregation model where then we're able to bring them together, look for a buyer who could buy from the aggregated carbon and develop a carbon trading platform. Previously, the issue was around policies, but we are now have developed carbon trading policy and guidelines, and we'll see a lot of now traction within that particular sector.
Coming to maybe indigenous knowledge, cultural knowledge, did you see that the indigenous knowledge influenced some of the innovations, and how has it played out? How have the people looked at this was an old knowledge? I want to bring something modern to it. To help with this issue about climate mitigation and just building resilience.
You'll find, yes, a lot of indigenous knowledge has played a bigger part on some of the innovation. So, for example, if you're developing a clean cooking stove, you know, there's a way that people like cooking. Yeah. So you may need to know how they want their cook stove to look like. So that's one area. So that has also influenced in terms of the type of cook stoves that are being developed by some of our enterprises. When you go to agriculture, you realize there are particular foods that people traditionally like, and maybe some of them are affected differently by climate change. So, for example, for me who comes from the western side of Kenya, we prefer ugali. So if there's no ugali, then people feel we've not eaten. So if then you're introducing an innovation, you look at what will they easily accept. So if I'm developing a high-yielding variety, it must be for maybe maize or sorghum or finger millet, because traditionally this is what most people within those particular areas like. Or even if I'm, for example, in Nyandarua, I know they generally like potatoes. So I must look also at that that knowledge.
The preference.
Yes, the preference. So if you go to people who live around the water bodies, the lakes and all that, you'll also realize maybe they like fish a lot, so they do a lot of fishing. And that's why you've seen like introduction of cage farming, for example, in Lake Victoria, which is a new innovation. So that you see you're not bringing to them something that they're really not aware about.
So that is how it has played out, eh? Okay. And again, just coming to those innovations, but also, are there some best practices that you can say this thing really works, this approach really works?
I think there are quite a number of best practices that that we have learned. So, for example, if you're doing a gender-based project, and we had very good learnings from our AgriBiz program, because we are focusing on youth and women. But then you'll also understand in our cultures, productive resources are owned by men. So in as much as I may be targeting the lady of the house, she may not be the owner of the land where I want her to do the project. So this called for us now again to do a male engagement plan. Where then we are able to now engage the men, educate them why this project is important, let them know that if the woman is empowered, they'll get more resources that will still come back to the household and support them. So that even when you ask now the lady to come for training and she'll be out of the home, for example, 3 days, the man is not wondering, where did my wife go? Because sometimes they may just think you've just disappeared. So the, for example, male engagement for programs that are targeting women would be also quite good. Also in terms of financing, also that has also influenced some best practices that we are seeing. So you realize that initially, if somebody qualifies, for example, for a proof of concept, would give them the entire amount of money, let's say 50,000. But then you go 6 months down the line to check whether there's any progress. Then you'll be told many things. My child was sick, so I used part of the money to take them to hospital. I didn't have school fees, so we used the money to pay school fees. So you realize the money never went really to grow the business. So one of the best practices that we've come up with in KCIC, and as a lesson learned, is that structure the funding based on particular milestones. So if you achieve a particular milestone, then you're able to disburse the funding. So then that way the funds then go towards building the
you give them in parts.
So you don't disburse you disburse them in different installments.
Let's go back to this best practice on male engagement.
Yes.
because I think it's a national issue.
Yes.
Around just addressing issues to do with climate change or even job creation, yes, or food. Many women and youth don't have access to the land. Is this something that you think can be shared more?
Yes, it's something that can be shared more, because if that's why I mentioned, if you are doing a program that, for example, looks on agriculture and you're targeting youth and women and they don't own the productive resources,
mm-hmm,
then I think it would be crucial that a male engagement plan should be in place.
Yeah.
To sensitize them why they should allow the youth, who could be their children, to use the land, or the women. Because mm-hmm, sometimes you find maybe the man is not even at home, but yeah, the woman may not be necessarily allowed to use
mm-hmm
the land. So this is just something that needs to be enhanced, so that they're able to understand
mm-hmm
that the land is there to benefit the household.
Mm.
Yeah, so that then the youth and women are allowed to use it for such initiatives.
And even this one around milestones,
yes,
and the danger of the funds being diverted.
Yes.
So you want them to start something?
Yeah, you have to start somewhere where you say, for example, if I use a basic example, you may want to start, for example, doing your tomatoes in a greenhouse.
Mm.
So are you able first identify where you'll put up, for example, the greenhouse?
Yes.
That could be just a basic, yeah, beginning. Then maybe source for the greenhouse itself. So then now the fund, yeah, so yeah, the first the greenhouse will then come, it's installed.
Yeah.
So it will give you resources to purchase the greenhouse.
Yeah.
Once it has come in, then now we work with you to put in what needs to go into the greenhouse before you plant. So you see, that way then you identify the site, you brought the greenhouse, you're able to plant, and then you've been able to harvest. So you see the flow of resources have actually gone towards the intended purpose.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like this particular project is working so much in the Nakuru County.
Yeah.
Could you mention maybe one or two initiatives?
Yeah.
That could really be applicable for Nakuru County.
Yes, and I think Nakuru County is quite lucky because it borders, I think, Kiambu, it borders Uasin Gishu at some point,
yeah,
it borders Kericho, it borders Bomet and Kajiado, if I'm not wrong.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's a lot that goes on there. We have a number of enterprises there, actually, within Nakuru County.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe for your information, what we learned about interacting with the county, it has the highest number of slaughterhouses.
Nakuru
County, okay, as a county, actually.
Mm.
So some of the initiative, for example, we have a gentleman who was doing biogas from slaughterhouse.
Mm.
It's an initiative that could actually benefit then Nakuru County, because with the many slaughterhouses that they have,
mm,
and if they need to green them, yeah, a solution around, for example, biogas from the waste from the slaughterhouse could,
yeah,
could be a very good idea. Yeah. Also, looking that it's an agricultural area, see what are some of these solutions then that can be applied to Nakuru, particularly for wheat farmers, maize farmers, yeah, within Nakuru, who can actually benefit from the organic fertilizers and all that. Then we have innovations also around commercial forestry,
yeah,
which could also benefit Nakuru County.
Mm.
As a good example, most of the lakes within the county, there's an overflow.
Mm-hmm.
Either because upstream, maybe people have cut trees, so there's, mm-hmm, a lot of runoff coming, yeah, to the lake,
mm-hmm,
or a lot of siltation, so it's happening, and the water then flows back to the community. So,
yeah,
is there a way that the county then could work with people upstream, for example, in Mau catchment areas, mm-hmm, and others,
mm-hmm,
to ensure that then they're able to harvest the water, they're able to do reforestation,
mm-hmm,
and then this will also help Nakuru County to grow, and actually to reduce then pollution to the lake. Because at the moment I hear you can't fish in Lake Naivasha. Lake Nakuru. Actually, yeah, because it's already polluted.
Yeah.
But it still has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
And you see that then kills livelihoods, because see the fishermen who used to depend on that particular lake.
Yeah.
And if we're able to manage our environment better, then that lake will not be polluted as is.
So it can be restored.
It can be restored, and then fishing can actually resume.
Okay. Yeah.
So also on waste, currently we are working with Nakuru County to support them on their waste management strategy, how they can mainstream the sustainable waste management, come up with the material recovery centers within the county.
Mm. What about, from all that you've said, what role can learning institutions, what are you seeing, what more can be done so that we build a climate-sensitive culture from a young age into our institution, again, so that you can have a bigger number of people taking an interest in starting some of these enterprises that can address some of the challenges that we've highlighted in these five sectors that you're working in?
Institutions of higher learning, and mainly universities and schools, and also research organization, are actually the source of innovations for us. They're the source of innovation. So because you'll find that in many of the courses that they offer, there's always a research project that then the students are required to undertake. And the most unfortunate bit is that majority of them then just end up on a shelf as a project that they did in school or at the university, and it ends there.
Yeah.
So as an organization, we are trying to promote now the commercialization of research from universities, from research organizations. And we've had a small program because the funding is still quite small. We call it CleanTech.
Mm.
And this mainly targets students in universities, because we want to see what are these innovations that they are thinking about, what are these innovations that they are coming up with, and can we as an institution then nurture them at a young age, move them from just being a project within school, but into a business. And these are, we have actually seen some quite successful enterprise. We picked some students who are developing sanitary pads actually from banana tissue. And we've supported them. Now they're already on the market. So if you go to any supermarket and you can check Ecobana, you'll see sanitary pads. Those sanitary pads actually started off just as an idea by students. And now it's
called what?
Ecobana.
Ecobana.
Yeah, Ecobana.
How do you spell it?
ECOBANA. Ecobana. So that's a product that's now is already on the market. It has been certified by KEBS. And actually now they are selling. So you see their mission was... You'll find there are places where the normal sanitary pads are not available to the girls. And how do you provide a solution? Because see now, there's a lot of waste, particularly around Kisi area, because they plant a lot of bananas and it just goes to waste.
Yeah.
So they've been able now to...
How are they've been able to turn this banana...
Yes, they convert the banana into fiber,
and then
that fiber is then used to make the sanitary pads.
Okay.
So it's a normal sanitary pad.
It's part of waste management.
Yes, it's part of waste management.
All right, so it's able to become clean and
all. Yes, it's clean and it's safe for
it's
use.
It's safe for use.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Eh?
So those are some of the things that we are then now looking at universities and seeing how do we better work with the institution of Ireland, because we know they have a lot of innovations.
Yeah.
And these innovations need to be commercialized. And I'm happy also the... The Kenya National Innovation Agency has taken up an initiative that is supporting then now this initiative on how universities could actually commercialize innovations from the university, and organizations like us will closely work with them. Currently, as an organization, we are working with schools through the 4K Club and Young Farmers for those who are in high school and college, because we believe it's only through at a young age that you'll be able to do behavior change, because the current mentality is that a farmer is somebody who has already retired.
Yes.
And that's a culture we are trying to change, that we want to make agriculture look cool.
Yeah.
So even if you're in agriculture, you don't have to be that 65-year-old person with ragged clothes, with a jembe and all that. So that's the mentality we are trying to change, that they can be able to do climate smart agriculture, they can do value addition, and we are supporting them now to come up with small school projects that then demonstrate the same. So we believe that by the time they become adults, they will have learned these things and be able to then practice them later in life.
And I think this in schools and also in at home, I think this also requires that you talk again to the parents, that again, you know, land is contentious in Kenya.
Yes.
But maybe once in a while the parents can be talked to so that they avail a small piece of land at home.
Yes, yeah, so what has happened actually is quite interesting. You realize that the projects that these students do in school, they've actually replicated some of them at home.
Okay.
So you'll find if they are doing vegetables in school, they've come home and they have now a small kitchen garden. And even now the parent can see what they should allow them, because now they are no longer buying vegetables. They can actually buy just pluck them from the small kitchen farm. Okay. If they are doing chicken, they'll still go home and have their small, maybe a kitchen house or something. Yeah. So that way then the family can also start seeing the value of such initiatives.
So from the people you're working with over the years, how do you look at the gender issues and the participation of youth? And I think we've already touched on it.
Yeah.
But generally, are we having enough women? How are the figures looking at? Are you looking at this data?
Yes, we collect our data. We disaggregate it further to look at in terms of beneficiaries, how many of them are women, how many of them are youth, and even if they are youth, how many of those further are female youth and how many are male youth. You'll be amazed. You see, even if you look at national statistics, you realize almost 70% of our population is youth. Each year, over 10,000 students graduate from university, and all these people need jobs. So I think for organizations like ourselves, it would be prudent that then we have initiatives that actually target just specifically those groups.
The youth.
Yeah, the youth. So, and that's why I told you within our program, we've also taken deliberate measures to see that we have programs that actually just target this group, like now the agribusiness was looking at youth and women. We also have other programs where we have embedded affirmative action, where we are saying all the applications, at least 30% of that should be women.
That means that it is not 50-50 men and women.
No, sometimes it's not.
Most often it is.
Sometimes you find actually there are programs where you'll find more women, but there are times where you have to apply affirmative action.
So that people are intentional in looking for women.
For women, exactly. Yeah. You'll find maybe a woman will not tick all the 10 boxes, but they've ticked 9.
So you qualify them. Tell me, of all these things you're doing, are you satisfied? And you've mentioned that 70 policies have been worked on?
Yes.
In terms of all this work, are we having, whether you're looking at these 5 sectors,
yes,
and maybe it could be national, it could be particular counties,
yes,
are we having adequate policy, legislation, or there are places you can say here this is prohibitive, is limiting?
Okay, I think as a country we've done quite well when it comes to policy environment, but I think we can still do better. So you see, for example, we have very good policies at national level. Like you see in agriculture, we have the agriculture sector growth strategy that was developed at national level. But if you go at the county level, it has not been domesticated to the
agriculture growth.
So, and you see, those are initiatives that then should be borrowing from national to county, because now you see agriculture is a devolved function. Government have also come up with a sustainable waste management policy and strategy. And all this need to be mainstream also at county, because now see, some of these functions have been devolved to the county. So we still have a bit of work that need to go in, but I will not say that we are really at a bad position. It's just that we need to do better in some areas, so that then these things then are able to work. If we go back to the county, one of the initiatives that we are trying to do is to do assisted compliance. So assisted compliance is where then now you are working, for example, with government and county government to ensure that if there are enterprises that are in a particular sector, can we do capacity building for the government, for the regulator, and then now they're able also to assist the enterprise to comply, rather than just me coming and telling you, comply. So assisted compliance is one of the things that we are trying to promote, so that there's a closer collaboration between private sector and
so whom are you assisting to comply? Is it government or the
both?
So
you work with them both, build capacity for them to understand. For example, if I'm doing waste and I'm using plastic, you see, you tell me the compliance will be that don't dump. That's the compliance. But then, even if you tell me don't dump and I've not provided the infrastructure, then how do I comply? So we need to work both together to see what part do I need to play as a private sector, as a citizen, and what work does the government need to play with the national or county to ensure that we are all compliant.
Then I think we're coming to a close. I just want to find out, perhaps, how can organizations, individuals, maybe better access resources? What can they do?
One of the things we advocate is that look within your locality. Identify what are the major problems, what are the major challenges within your locality, and try and come up with a solution to some of those challenges. Because it's only that way that then you'll be able to unlock resources. So if I'm in a community where I feel maybe, for example, they don't have clean drinking water, what can I do to ensure that clean drinking water is available? You see, then that creates an opportunity for me to attract funding towards provision of clean water to that particular community. If I'm in an area where maybe dumping is an issue, then can I come up with maybe a recycling facility that then will help that community better manage its waste, for example? So then that way, even if you're talking to any financier, because one of the bigger question they'll ask you, who is your customer? What impact did you want to create? And if you can't demonstrate that, then it also becomes very difficult for you to attract this this funding. So I think first is just look within our communities. What are the problems? What solutions can we provide? And from that way, we are able then to unlock some of these findings.
And I think the key issue now for many things is that people don't have information. And how can all stakeholders, what do you think about information? I think you're also you're also an expert besides climate and all this and strategy. You're also somebody in communication. What can we say?
I think we need to do a lot of community awareness using all means, mainly even our mainstream media. They are a big influencer. Is there a way that as stakeholders, we can work with them to disseminate some of this information? Because what I know, if, for example, a message is passed through one of the national leading newspaper or television or radio, people will believe it more. So I think that's why we call upon now various stakeholders to work with mainstream media, see what information can be passed on to these people. Use maybe even government channels, because they have networks. Look at organizations that have networks on the ground. Use religious organizations, because they're also able to reach the grassroots and pass this particular information. And also look at who are the key influencers within the community. People could be faster adopters and others could actually learn from them. So if we have such, then it becomes easy for people to access this information.
As we close, maybe what would be your last closing remark with regard to all this conversation?
My closing remark would be that we know climate change is a challenge, but it's not a bigger challenge if we all work together to address it. So I think my call to action is greater collaboration, greater partnership, and this way, then we'll be able to solve any challenge that we are facing.
And that wraps up our crucial two-part series on financing and the wider landscape of climate innovation in Kenya. Thank you for joining me, Maslin Nyambala, as we explored these vital opportunities and insights.
Thank you for listening to the Africa Speaking Podcast. Join us in our next episode, brought to you by Twiza Communications in partnership with Forum Sieve. For any comments and views, you can reach us through our website, www.africaspeaking.org. You can also reach us on Facebook, Twiza Communications, or on our X handle, @ToezaComs. You can also write to us on email, info@africaspeaking.org.